How do you build a high-performing culture? This is Culture Architects, candid conversations with extraordinary leaders sharing their biggest successes, failures, and lessons learned on their culture journeys. Here's David J. Friedman.
Thanks for joining me for the second part of my conversation with executive coach, keynote speaker, and the best-selling author of Rebound, From Pain to Passion, Leadership Lessons Learned, Matt Daugherty. We've been talking about Matt's leadership journey that included winning a national championship at North Carolina when he was coached by the legendary Dean Smith and got the chance to play alongside NBA greats James Worthy and Michael Jordan. And now, Matt, I want to shift our conversation. I want to talk about your career as a head coach. Where was your first head coaching position? Was that at Notre Dame?
Notre Dame. My first head coaching job, yes.
And so you take over and you got to be thinking, all right, I've learned a lot from Dean Smith, from my previous coaches, from being an assistant. I'm going to put my stamp on it. How do you do that?
You hire people that will align with you. Mm-hmm. I did not hire any former players, but I hired Doug Wojcik, was my first hire, who was an assistant at the Naval Academy, played with David Robinson at Navy. And I got to know Doug, and I knew, you know, play hard, play smart, play together was his core values. Bob McKinnon, who was very close to the North Carolina program, was another hire. And then managing change is a tricky thing, but there they were embracing change. I had time to institute change. It started with, you know, the work. A couple of things are going to come to mind. One of my first workouts with a player, when I took over, the program was noted being a little soft. Okay. Notre Dame would recruit good kids, right? Good students, you know, and Pete Carrill would call them three car garage guys, you know. he wanted to recruit, you know, sons of cops and firemen. And so, you know, if you had a glass backboard in your driveway, you know, that was a red flag. So I've got a team of nice guys, but they were a little soft. So I remember one of my first workouts with Jimmy Dillon, and I don't mind mentioning his name because he went on to be one of my best leaders. We're playing in a workout, and he's going one-on-one against somebody, and he gets poked in the eye, and he drops the ball and walks off the side corner of the court. And I lit him up like a Christmas tree, and I said, so you're just going to – you got hit in the eye. You're going to walk off the court and drop the ball and give it to the other team? So I told him my favorite story. The legendary story at Carolina basketball was Phil Ford was maybe the most popular player to this day that ever played at North Carolina. Wow. And he finished in 1978. Phil was playing defense, drew a charge, referee didn't call it. They inbounded the ball to Phil. Phil dribbled over to the side of the bench and handed his tooth to the trainer and continue to dribble up the court and get into the offense. Play hard, play smart, play together. That's playing hard.
Yeah.
So that was my chance to tell the Phil Ford story. We went on, we lost an exhibition game to Marathon Oil. Ohio State had just played them and beat them by 25. We lost by 24. We're supposed to play Ohio State in 5 days, 6 days. We're supposed to have off from practice. So I called practice. I told the staff, we need to have practice. I said, tell the managers, no balls. Tell them to call the players. We're going to have practice. And I ran them for about an hour. And guys were, you know, falling out and begging for water. Have you ever saw Miracle on Ice?
That's what I was picturing. I was picturing that scene in Miracle on Ice where they're going back and forth and back and forth.
That was my assistant said that reminded him of the scene from Miracle on Ice. Guys were, you know, falling out. I said, you can't run anymore. Get the hell out of the gym. I said, you know, I bust my butt. I raise money for a new locker room. I spend more time with you than I do my kids. I said, you're going to give me that crap effort? I said, in the paper, it said lackadaisical effort dooms the Irish. I said, I've been called a lot of things before, but not lackadaisical. So it goes back to the core values, play hard. That's the most important thing. You play hard. You did not play hard. Now, doesn't mean you're going to win every game. But you play hard, you play smart, you play together, and then the talent takes care of the rest. And if we don't win, but we do those things, the challenge as a leader is you got to still reward them for their behavior, not for their results. Mm-hmm. And it's like Nick Saban, it's about the process.
Right.
Dean Smith, it was all about the process. He never would judge us or talk to us after a game. He would just say, good game, you know, or say the prayer, and we'd go the next day. Now he'd have a chance to watch the film so he could actually see our behaviors and not just judge it because we won or lost.
Right.
So, you know, there are times he'd say, hey, we played well. We just lost the game. Or at times we'd win the game and he'd say, you know, we didn't play very well. And that's the tough thing. And I brought this up to my teams, one of my Vistage teams. I said, you know, some of you guys had great years. I said, a lot of that was, some of that was due to COVID. You got a tailwind. I said, don't get caught up in the results and think that, you know, patting yourself on the back. Like, what did you do? Did you really have a good year? Or were you lucky? Or was, you know, and you've got to tighten. The best time to tighten the screws is when you're winning. But that takes a great deal of maturity to do that.
Yeah, because it's easy to have that, to have the success that you're having distort your point of view.
You get intoxicated with success. And you think, well, yeah, we're pretty good, aren't we? And all of a sudden you cut corners. And as a leader, that's when you can really drop the hammer if you have mature staff team with you. I remember we beat my first year at North Carolina, we beat Wake Forest at Wake Forest. We were on a middle of an 18-game winning streak. We were ranked number one in the country. The only reason we beat them was we were more talented. We did not play well. And after the game, I told them that. You know, they're happy in the locker room. Like, you know, guys, I'm not that happy. We did not play well. We beat them because we have more All-Americans than they do.
Yeah.
They didn't like that. Maybe I didn't have a good enough relationship with them at that time. Maybe I delivered it in a too harsh a way. And then we ended up losing five out of our last 10 games because we weren't getting better, although we were winning 18 games in a row.
I have heard Nick Saban talk about that you're not playing against the opponent. You're playing against your own standard of excellence. And that sounds like what you're really
100%.
Saying.
100%. It's golf. You're playing golf. You're not playing your opponent. You're playing the course. You're playing yourself. You know, every shot, every staying present. Yeah, 100%. Nick Saban, I could play for Nick Saban.
Yeah.
That's the kind of mentality that I tried to have as a coach. And, you know, we'll celebrate at the end of the year. Now, we have to have celebrations. You have to have many celebrations. And I would give my team, we'd be Duke at Duke. On a Thursday night, we had a 9 o'clock game, and then we're turning around playing Georgia Tech at home on a Saturday at noon or 1 o'clock. We beat Duke at Duke, and I told the team, you get to enjoy it till like midnight or 1 o'clock. I mean, the game's over at 11, you know, you enjoy it till 1 o'clock, and then, you know, it's moving on to Georgia Tech.
Yep.
And so to have the maturity to deal with success. People want success, but a lot of them don't have the maturity to deal with success.
Yeah. I hear sometimes teams talk about the 24-hour rule that, you know, for 24 hours, we're going to celebrate, or even for 24 hours, we're going to commiserate about what we did wrong.
That's right.
But then we got to move on, and we got the next game to be ready for.
That's right.
You know, I was talking about the women's lacrosse team in my high school, and similar to what you're describing in Nick Saban, I've seen them, you know, win a game 19-2, and after the game, they're on the field working on things because the coach wasn't satisfied with how they played. Again, same point is they're not playing the opponent. They're playing to a standard of excellence.
And that takes a great deal of maturity. It takes great leadership, great culture, alignment. Once you build it, then it's like a snowball. It snowballs, you know, because now you get internal, you talk about internal advertising, I believe is kind of your term that you used. I may have butchered it a little bit. But that internal advertising comes in different forms. It, you know, I mean, what's the most powerful form of advertising is word of mouth, right? So now you get an upperclassman or more powerful, a former player to come back that's successful and tells you why it's important to hit the first open man and why it's important to point to the passer. And if you don't do that, why you need to do that, and gets on you, you know, the peer pressure is so much more powerful than it coming from the leader.
Yeah. Let's just switch gears a little bit. And I want to get into the transition that you made from coaching, and then unfortunately had a, you know, disappointing coaching experience where you were forced to resign from UNC. And that had to be really
twice.
Difficult.
So I was forced to resign there, and I got fired at SMU too.
Yeah. And in public, in a public setting, I mean, most of us don't lose jobs in a public setting. That's got to be really difficult.
That's right. No, I went to the public square and they brought out the guillotine.
The tar and feather.
Chopped my head off. Yeah.
That's got to be hard.
And there's a celebration too, David. People celebrated.
Oh, God. Very few of us ever have that experience, thankfully. So how did you, you know, you obviously had to take a hard look at yourself at that point and say, all right, so where did I lose my way? What am I going to do next? So tell me about, you know, what was your mindset and how did you successfully navigate from that experience to saying, all right, I'm going to use this experience. I'm going to somehow take what I've learned from this and carry that forward so that I do something positive with this. Tell me, how did that happen?
Well, I appreciate that. I think I took the mindset of a player and a coach. What's the mindset of a coach? Let's just talk football because that's kind of, you know, easier. Games are on, you know, let's say Nick Saban. Game on Saturday. What does he do? Let's say they lose a game or they win the game. They watch the film and then they adjust practice accordingly and start practice on Monday. At the end of the season, win or lose, you need to evaluate your season. What do you need to do better going forward? Year in review, just like in business. So I lost my job at North Carolina. I got fired in a very public manner. They questioned my leadership publicly. So I'm like, okay, I lost the game. I lost the season. I lost my job. They're questioning my leadership. I got to get better. And it's just like a player, like, oh, you're not good enough. You got to work on your jump shot. Okay, I've got to work on my jump shot. You know, Coach Smith says, I need you to get stronger. Okay, I'm going to get in the weight room. You know, that's the mentality of a player. That's the mentality of a coach. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to get better. Mm-hmm. And I went on a leadership journey. A buddy of mine, John Black, who worked in business, had gotten, I don't know if he got fired, but he was running a financial division for a company in Charlotte, went on a leadership journey. And so he was really my mentor and helped me with this. He and I are a lot alike, you know, in the DISC assessment, a high D. Mm-hmm. So I went on a leadership journey. I went to University of Virginia, worked with a lady named Carol Weber, went to Wharton. My brother went to Wharton, took a class there, met Fran Johnston, and then she became my executive coach, my leadership coach. I'd fly up to Philadelphia once a month, meet with her while I was out of coaching. I was doing some TV. I remember sitting in the class at Wharton, and she was talking, and we were studying out of the book Primal Leadership, The Art of Emotional Intelligence by Dan Goleman. And a couple things resonated. One said, leadership is a learned behavior. That was the most exciting thing I've ever read, David, because at that point, they were telling me I wasn't a good leader. And I was thought that leadership, you were born a good leader. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking I'm not ever going to be a good leader. So when I read that, like, that was the most exciting thing I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And then she's talking about emotional intelligence in 2003. And I'm thinking, what in the hell is emotional intelligence? I never heard of emotional intelligence. And as she's explaining and I'm sitting there in class, I'm saying, oh, my God, if I would have taken this class before as a head coach, I might still be the head coach in North Carolina.
Wow.
Because I had zero emotional intelligence. I didn't get it. Carol Weber had me take some Myers-Briggs assessment. And, you know, I walked into her house, her home office in Charlottesville in May, I think, of 2003. And I'm beaten up. I mean, emotionally beaten up. And, you know, she sits me down and she said, you're an ENTJ. And I
thought it was ESPN. Jokingly,
yeah, I thought, yeah. So where do I sign on? Have you need my agent? She, no, I jokingly say, you know, I've been called a lot of four-letter words before, but never an ENTJ. And then she goes on to say, you know, only 2% of the population are ENTJs. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I'm kind of elite. I mean, you know, 2%, like North Carolina just fired an elite coach. And she's like, no, you don't get it. That means 98% of the population don't think like you think. And I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. So leadership is a learned behavior. And I'm learning today, like one of the best things about being a Vistage chair is I'm getting better. I am getting better as a leader. I mm-hmm. still make mistakes at 59 years old. Leadership is never, you never arrive. I use a lot of sports analogies. You get into the red zone as a team. You think you're getting ready to score. Then they push a button and they extend the field another 100 yards. That's leadership. Mm-hmm. And Bob McKillop talks about coaching scars. And we've all had them, you know, where you regret an incident that you've had with a team member. And I had one recently in a meeting with a young leader. And I've had to look inward and say, you know what? Even if I felt like that person's behavior was wrong, I reacted. Tim Kite, who's a good follow on Twitter, talks about E plus R equals O, where E is the event, R is your reaction, and O is the outcome. The only thing mm-hmm. we control as leaders is the R,
right?
Our reaction. So this event occurs in a meeting. I respond in front of the team, in front of the group, and it feels good for a minute, and then I realize there's collateral damage. Mm-hmm. And so now I beat myself up, talk to the person, and now I'm going to try to use it as a teaching moment. Because as a leader, one of the best things I think we can do is be authentic and say, hey, I screwed up.
Yes.
I shouldn't have done it that way. Now, the key is, Coach Smith would say, you can't apologize. You know, like if you're apologizing too much to your team, you're not really a great leader. So
yes.
Don't let that happen again. You know, you can only do that so many times you have to change, and you can change, but change is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I've often said to people, you know, when we're working with our clients on fundamentals, that as a leader, you've got to be a really good example, but you're never going to be perfect, to your point. You're going to make mistakes. And in fact, to some extent, it's exactly as you're describing, it's a great example of leadership when you're authentic enough to fall short, own it, apologize, and work on it. But to your point, if that keeps happening over and over and over again, at some point you lose credibility. But to be able to be big enough to say, I screwed up, I didn't handle that situation well, I own it, I'm working on it, and this is what I'm going to do to fix that. That's in many respects, in my experience, that's better leadership than thinking you have to be perfect all the time.
Yeah, well,
you're not going to be.
No. and my beliefs, my faith is the only person that was perfect. They hung on a cross. So good luck with trying to be perfect. We could take that a lot of different ways because it's that's my point, is that, you know, you get into the red zone and they extend the field 100 yards, or it's like golf, you know, you feel like you've got it. Like as soon as you birdie a hole, like we, you know, the post birdie mess up, like
right.
You birdie a hole, you think you've got this thing figured out. Boy, I'm really rolling.
Yeah. Doesn't work. Yeah, golf's a humbling experience in that way. Even beyond one hole. As soon as you get a groove, you get three or four rounds in a row, and you think, I got this thing figured out. And the next day, you stink. Very humbling.
Yeah, that's leadership. That's leadership, yeah. Right? I mean, that is leadership. And you have to be intentional. And intentional is like my word for 2022. You got to be intentional. You got to work at it.
Yeah. So for the sake of our audience, because some may be less familiar with Vistage, so Vistage is a CEO peer group organization and brings together CEOs who are learning to be great leaders. And Matt is a chairperson of a group like that, so he helps facilitate a group like that. Tell us a little bit about, so how did you bump into Vistage? How did you get connected to the Vistage world?
I got excited about executive coaching when I had Jerry Bell, Dr. Jerry Bell in Chapel Hill, work with me when I was the head coach at North Carolina. looking back, I wish, you know, I would have embraced that even more. And, you know, if he could have helped me on board and the whole deal. And so I always thought, you know, that was pretty cool. And then when I got fired and then I started working with Fran Johnson in Philadelphia, I'm like, that the impact that she's making on me, these classes are making on me, are powerful. And then I wanted to try coaching again to put those lessons to use. And I did, and went on another journey about 7 years and had some informal executive coaches. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, I always have backup plans. And I'm thinking, you know, this would be cool. And so then after I got out of, you know, the NBA and college athletics, I went and took the John Maxwell training program. So I went through John Maxwell's training program at the suggestion of a buddy of mine who went through it. And I thought, okay, I want to do this. I want to be an executive coach. And then I was doing that. I had met somebody at Vistage, Dave Zerfoss, who you probably know.
Yes.
He's one of the best chairs in Vistage. And he's in Charlotte. I met him about 5 years ago because a friend of mine was one of his members. And I thought Vistage is pretty neat. So I reached out to him again. And I like what Vistage had to offer. It's more robust. It has a little more firepower. And one of the best things about Vistage has access to speakers like you. And the back office stuff was taken care of. And all I had to worry about was recruiting and coaching. And so... And I love to recruit. He's right up my alley. I get to recruit
like
coach.
It.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't have any parents calling me after a meeting saying, you know, why didn't my son get more shots? So it's really, I love it. It's fulfilling work. And, you know, I plan it. I love reading it. I'm growing as a result. And I like to be a lifelong learner. So Vistage is just a wonderful fit. And I'm blessed to be a part of the organization.
That's great. So I want to ask you sort of one last question. You've had more than a lifetime's experience in your lifetime. Very few people have had the variety of experiences that you've had at the level that you've had from being both a player and a coach. You've had highs and you've had lows that many of us don't ever experience. You've come out of it all with wisdom, which you share in your book, which we'll talk about at the end. A young person comes to you and says, you know, Matt, I'm getting into coaching and I want to be a great coach. What would be, if you had to give them the number one or two most important things you've learned that you didn't know back then that you would impart to a younger person who's becoming a coach, whether it's athletics or otherwise, what's your one or two top things you would share with them?
Yeah, well, I talk about this in my book, and as a teacher, as a coach, the best way for me to remember things is acronyms, and so I'd create them. And I created this story. You know, the stories are, you know, and I think you share this too. Stories are a great way for people to remember things. So I recruited this kid from Wisconsin who was from Eastern Europe. His name's Stevet, and the reason. I Googled Stevet and it came up Wisconsin. So I make up this story about recruiting a 7-footer whose name was Stevet, S-T-E-V-I-T. Those are the six no's of leadership, K-N-O-W-S. Okay. The S stands for self. The T stands for team. The E stands for environment. The V stands for vision. The I stands for industry. And T stands for truth. So I think that the three most important in those is one, you got to know yourself. That's the most important. And when I realized that, you know, I was an ENTJ and only 2% of the population thought like I thought, that opened up a whole new world to me. So now as I'm doing these, I'm an assessment junkie. You know, I do DISC, Culture Index, whatever assessments out there, I'm doing it because I want to learn about myself. And so now I try to keep the DISC assessment in front of me on my phone with the four different categories so I can refer to it and learn more about myself and learn more about the person who, you know, I might be talking to. So I'm dominant, direct, demanding, decisive, determined. I'm a doer and I can get defiant under stress. I like to win. You know, it's more about results, more about performance. The most important thing is performance with me. And that's okay. But the most of the population are S's, and that's all about people.
So it starts with knowing yourself.
Knowing yourself. Yep. And then the second one is knowing your team. So if you have a team of 15 players and four assistant coaches, let's just call it 25 direct reports, do you know your team? What's their DISC assessment? What do they value? What's their biggest fear? So now you can communicate, because it all comes down to communication, right? How do I communicate with you? I might communicate with you different than Joe. Mm-hmm. Because you're an S and Joe's a C, and Joe just wants information, needs to know what's expected, wants the pattern, doesn't like change. I love change. I get excited by change, David. And I came in at Notre Dame, they embraced change. At North Carolina, they didn't want change because they had been successful for 39, 36 years. Mm-hmm. And I should have been slow. I didn't recognize that. I should have been slow to change. With my personality type, I'm impatient.
Yeah,
I get impatient. So I had to tap the brakes. I didn't tap the brakes. So know yourself, then know the team. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, and I said self was most important, but this goes hand in hand. You got to know the truth. You got to mine for the truth. The truth is a gift. And people don't like to deliver the truth because people don't like to receive the truth. And a gift of truth feedback is huge. And that's the only way you can grow. And I say this in the book, if you don't manage the truth will manage you right out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you create an environment where people are going to tell you the truth? You got to praise it. You got to welcome it. You got to thank it. I jokingly say, for those of us that are old enough to remember Animal House, you know, when he's getting hit with the paddle, thank you, sir, may I have another. Hey, Matt, you're really not very good at talking to people. You're just all about results. You need to be able to engage and care for people more. Thank you, sir, may I have another. Thank you, David. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. You know, that's an environment. You're creating a behavior, you know, mining forward to the truth.
Yeah. Patrick Lencioni talks about mining for truth and the importance of a team of having that kind of environment where it's not only safe to do that, but it's expected to do that. Otherwise, yeah, you don't get anywhere.
John Maxwell talks about you grow at the end of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to get uncomfortable. Goes back to culture, you know, and your core values. My core values are respect, trust, commitment, positivity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you respectfully tell me something and we have a trusting relationship, I know you're not doing it to hurt me. You're committed to my growth and you do it in a positive manner. We win.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Matt, I appreciate the chance to spend time with you. Absolutely fascinating. You've got a journey that very few people have, and a whole lot of respect for the way you're able to turn around disappointments, frustrations, challenges that you've faced and turn them into something that becomes growth. That's something that you've really learned. Matt's book, for those that would love to check it out, Rebound from Pain to Passion, Leadership Lessons Learned, great book. And again, very few people have Matt's experience and the wisdom he's gained from that. So Matt, thank you again for joining us today. It's been just a total pleasure.
Well, I'm a big fan of yours, David, and your book, Culture by Design. And I've learned so much from you in a short period of time and look forward to leaning on your expertise. Thank you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Matt. And that's it for the first episode of Culture Architects. If you enjoy the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so that you automatically get my new shows right when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love it if you left us a review so that more folks like yourself can discover the show. I'll see you next time.
This has been Culture Architects with David J. Friedman. Be sure to join us next time for more insights and wisdom from great leaders from all walks of life. To book David for your events or to learn more about his writing, speaking, or consulting, go to davidjfriedman.com. Culture Architects with David J. Friedman is a production of Forbes Books.